the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pro-White system at RadioArian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 14th of May 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioArian.com. Well, we've got a lot of good news today to discuss for once, and of course it's to do with the European Union elections. And I really do think this is going to be some of the best elections that we've had yet. They do actually quite help us, I think, these EU elections. Even though the people that get elected, they don't really have a lot of power, it does give a chance for populist parties to get government funding or funding from the EU. It gives them a chance to get in the media. It gives them a chance to organise and to put pressure on the other parties that form part of the government in their respective countries. I mean, particularly in Britain, where we have a first-past-the-post system, it means it's impossible for any parties other than Labour or Conservative to actually get into government. Very, very hard to actually get an MP. I think UKIP, the most they ever managed was to get two MPs. If it hadn't been for the European Union elections, we would hardly have heard from Nigel Farage. So it is quite helpful that we have these elections. And of course this year there is so much resentment of the EU, the EU skeptics and the populist parties are going to do massively well. And of course a particular politician that has done very well over the last year is Matteo Salvini, and he's already being hailed as the leader of Europe, the main man who is representing Europe now. He's going up against Macron, who really sort of took over from Merkel as the face of Europe. Now we have Matteo Salvini, and his policies, I mean, they just keep getting better and better. He's managed to cut back 90% of immigration. He's managed to show that you can do that while still being a part of the EU. He's trying to get legalized guns, I think. He's got rid of gypsies. He's made changes to the economy, lots and lots of really, really good stuff. And he's always very, very cheerful about it. He refuses to back down. He puts the Italian people first. And he's a really great example of a good populist politician. And of course, once he was in power, he massively surged forward past the people that he was in coalition with. Once populists or nationalists actually get a chance at government, and the people see that they are the only people that are going to put the people first, they have people love them. They have a massive surge in popularity. Because when the Italians had their election, the League or the Lega party that Matteo Salvini represents were basically equal with the Five Star Movement, which is another populist party, but it's a left-wing populist party, a Eurosceptic party. And since the pair of them have been in power, Salvini's Lega party are doubling the approval ratings of the Five Star Movement, doing fantastically well. And we've got a report here from Breitbart about the EU elections. They say, as the European elections draw closer, opinion polls in Italy have put populist Interior Minister Matteo Salvini's Lega party above the 30% mark, fueling speculation that his party could become the largest in the European Parliament. The largest in the European Parliament. That means that he will overtake Macron, he will overtake Merkel, and he'll be the main man. And don't forget, he's also forming this populist supergroup of populist parties in Europe, which could put a spanner in the spokes of the European Union. They will be able to prevent this legislation being forced upon the rest of Europe, to force us to accept asylum seekers, force us to accept refugees, force us to accept the Marrakesh Agreement. They'll actually be able to do something about this. I mean, we do live in exciting times. This is the first time that we've had a big civic nationalist revival like this that I can remember. It's really great to see. It's very encouraging to see people that say, "Oh, we've got no hope, and within 10 years we're all going to be replaced." I mean, we've got this big populist revival. We've got a chance here, and we need to be supporting these populists. We need to be putting aside differences about that they're not pure enough, their ideals aren't close enough to ours. We have to support what we have. We have to do what we can with what we have. And over here we've got Tommy Robinson, as Mark Cullett has pointed out. He's paid out £5,000 to put himself in for the Northwest. And he's taken his life in his hands every time he goes out campaigning. He's got mobs of Muslims that want to kill him. He's had his bus has had bricks put through the windscreen windows. His driver has been intimidated into not driving. He's too frightened to drive. And you've got the British MPs, you've got Anna Soubry complaining about death threats on Twitter on the BBC. Well, there are credible death threats against Tommy Robinson, who is campaigning on an anti-Islam platform, and he wants to bring the issue of the grooming gangs right to the heart of the EU. How can anyone complain about that? I mean, just because he supports Zionism, you know, that's not a reason to not support the guy who is he's not going into the EU to promote Zionism. He's going into the EU to promote the victims of the grooming gangs. He's already said he's going to give all his money to the charities that they've set up for these grooming gangs. That's the most important thing at the moment, and we need to get behind him rather than run the guy down, because at least he is doing something, and he's got masses of support. We would be absolute fools to be taking the side of the Antifa and being against him. And this goes for whatever country there is in Europe. I mean, I'm saying how much I think of Matteo Salvini here, but apparently he's a big friend to Israel as well. I mean, that is the drawback with these populist parties, but that is the situation that we are in today. If you want to get a party into power that is going to put the interests of white people first, the only chance they have of getting into power is if they suck up to Israel. We live in a time where they're going to eventually make it illegal to even criticize Islam. I mean, things have got gradually worse and worse. You can't say, well, we're only going to support somebody that exposes the Jewish question now. I mean, you could do that 70 years ago and you could get elected, but you can't do that today. And in 10 years' time, you're not even going to be able to criticize Islam. So we have to support these people that are. That's because that's our only chance, really, politically. I'm not saying we don't need to support these other groups like Nordic Resistance Movement that do expose the Jewish question. We need to support them as well. And there's nothing to stop you from supporting both. And that's what I say we should be doing. We should be supporting every possible thing we can that is going to make our conditions better, that's going to make life better for us within our respective countries. According to Roberto Weber, head of the Opinion Research Institute, IXE, Salvini and Lega will easily dominate the European elections in Italy, as no other parties running are even close to them in recent polling data, he said when speaking to Swedish newspaper Gestads Allehanda. There are no opinion institutions here that believe that Lega gets below 30%, so they are more than twice as large. Although the EU election is different from the national elections, but it is still a strong tailwind for Salvini, Weber told the paper. According to Weber, Salvini has filled a gap in Italian politics that was once held by former Prime Minister and current leader of Forza Italia, Silvio Berlusconi. Salvini builds the same voter base that Berlusconi did in the early 2000s, he said, and claimed some Italians had a need for a strong leader. Well, he's different to Salvini because he's an open nationalist. I mean, Salvini was probably a patriot, but Salvini is an open nationalist and he wants to stop all immigration and he wants to send them all back if he could. He's going to start sending back all the criminals as it is. And this is an example that these other parties need to be following. Weber also added that Italians look at domestic politics rather than European Union politics, and that many are concerned with issues like mass migration, jobs, and a weak Italian economy overall. And each one of those problems is caused by mass immigration, which is why people are supporting him. The coalition partners of Lega in government, the Five Star Movement, have seen a rapid decline in the polls, and while they consistently poll second to Lega, they are often double digits behind. And that's incredible, as I say, because I think he's only been in office for a year, and when they started out, they were both equal. So that shows you the approval ratings of a populist once they get into power. They just zoom ahead because the public can see that they keep to their election promises and they are putting the people first. And this five-star movement, the Eurosceptics, I mean, they really didn't have that much of a platform, but people seemed to like them quite a lot when they first got elected. And now Salvini is just zoomed ahead, leagues ahead. I mean, double the approval rating. And that really does show you that he's doing good over there. Weber attributed the loss in support from the lack of real policy changes promised by the Five Star Movement, along with infighting with Lega and corruption scandals. In one major incident, several five-star senators openly rebelled against Salvini and movement leader Luigi Di Maio, voting against the migration and security decree drafted by Salvini last year. So some of these leftist members, they openly said to the public that they were going to vote against stopping the invasion of Italy. And how on earth did they think that was going to be liked by the general population? Liga's poll numbers also rival and may even surpass those of German Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Union, which combined with its sister party, the Bavarian Christian Social Union, could win 27 seats according to a projection by Europe Elects, but on its own, the CDU would only win 23 seats. So what do we say here that Matteo Salvini is predicted to win how many seats? Well, it says he's got the 30% mark, and I think it said 29 seats he's projected to win somewhere. So he's basically leading in front of Merkel. In France, Salvini's key ally, Marine Le Pen, and her party, the Rassemblement National, the National Rally, are also leading. French President Emmanuel Macron's La République en Marche in some recent polls. The new polling results led Miss Le Pen to declare that the EU election was a referendum on Macron's presidency and said that if he loses, he must resign. And she's a couple of points ahead, I think, from looking at the polls there. I mean, this is fantastic news. Populists, nationalists are leading in France. Populists, nationalists are leading in Italy. We've got very weak populists leading in Britain as well, with the Brexit Party. The Conservative Party, under Theresa May, has sunk to fifth place in EU Parliament election polls, behind Nigel Farage's Brexit Party, Labour, the Liberal Democrats, and even the Green Party. I mean, the Conservatives are totally done for. I mean, all the people that would normally have voted Conservative are now going to be voting for Nigel Farage and the Brexit Party because Theresa May has completely destroyed the Conservatives with what she's done with Brexit. The Tory collapse has been stunning, with a party that has billed itself as the natural party of government and claims to be the longest lived active political party in the world, now polling at just 10%, according to a new YouGov survey. The weeks-old Brexit Party, led by Nigel Farage, meanwhile is dominating the race on 34%. More than the Tories with their 10%, the opposition Labour Party with 16%, and the anti-Brexit Change UK, or the CUK Party, combined. Just think about that. I mean, they're doing so well that they're doing better than both the Tories and Labour, who are in government here in Britain at the moment, and also this new independent group that's called the CUK Party. And I mean, again, that just shows you how detached these people are from the general public, that they would think that it's a good acronym to call your party the CUK Party. At least they're being honest, I guess. The failure of the CUK Party to break through bodes extremely poorly for the electoral prospects of the Remain resistance, led by the likes of Tony Blair, given it was supposed to serve as a Remainer answer to the Brexit Party. And they were hoping that they were going to be doing better than the Brexit Party, and they're doing very, very badly. I know that people thought after these local elections a while back, and the Liberal Democrats were the main winners in the local elections, people were thinking, well, is that because a lot of people in the country want to stay in the EU? Well, quite clearly it isn't, because the parties that want to stay within the EU are doing dreadfully here, absolutely dreadfully. Farage is steaming ahead with twice as much support. I think people just voted for the Liberal Democrats because they will do better in local politics rather than a group like UKIP, and also because the Brexit Party weren't actually standing in that election. So rather than allow what's happening with Brexit to change the voting pattern, I think people just voted for the Lib Dems because they have a good record of local government, where they can't actually get involved in immigration policy and political correctness, where all they are responsible for is allocating the money that the council spends. The CUK Party had some significant advantages over Farage's party, which has put candidates outside the world of politics, including entrepreneurs, members of the fishing community, and decorated war veterans, front and centre. While CUK enjoyed a parliamentary base of former Labour and Tory MPs with relatively high profiles and good media contacts from the get-go. Now, although we haven't been seeing much of the Brexit Party on TV, in fact, we haven't seen the Brexit Party at all, even though they've been having these huge rallies, we have seen Nigel Farage interviewed, and we have seen him getting masses of exposure in the Express and in the Daily Mail. So I wouldn't say they had that much of an advantage over Farage's party there. The better-known Liberal Democrats, who are also campaigning on an anti-Brexit platform, with the somewhat contentious assistance of EU politicians like Guy Verhofstadt, who has insulted Britons by calling them stupid for voting for Brexit, are faring somewhat better, but have not garnered even half the public support mustered by Mr. Farage, sitting at 15%. Perhaps even more troubling, polling for general election voting intentions shows that many people appear to plan on backing Mr. Farage in the national as well as the European elections, with the Brexit Party currently outpointing the Conservatives in a Comres poll. And of course, I talked about that in Arian Britannia yesterday. And That is an earth-shattering moment in British politics, that a brand new party could be outpolling the established Conservative Party while they are actually in power. I'm not so sure that means that the Brexit Party might actually win outright in a general election, but they would certainly get better than the Conservatives, and they don't even have a manifesto. All they have is one man leading them, Nigel Farage, who is obviously very popular among the general public. If translated into action at the ballot box, the poll results would see the Brexit Party claim some 49 seats in the House of Commons, and Remainer Party Chairman Brandon Lewis ousted from his seat, along with other Tory heavyweights, including serving members of the Cabinet, and even leadership hopeful Boris Johnson, a leading but so far ineffectual Brexiteer. And that just shows us that even the Conservative Party members that supposedly support Brexit have upset the general public, and they wouldn't actually vote for them. I mean, the saddest thing about all of this is that UKIP, who did start out with a 7% a 7% placing in the poll, they've now dropped to 2%. And the reason for that, I'm sad to say, it is because Sargon has allowed the UKIP campaign to become associated with his tweets from a few years back where he said he wouldn't rape an MP. Instead of deflecting from that and saying, look, we need to be talking about political correctness, we need to be talking about grooming gangs, we need to be talking about Islamization, he has tried to use that tweet to gain some kind of notoriety. No doubt he thought by getting the notoriety, he would get extra media time for UKIP. And he has got extra media time, but it's all been devoted to the so-called rape tweets. I mean, it's no good getting the extra media time if you're just going to allow it to be used to smear you. You need to. He really needed to be making this all about Islamization, political correctness, immigration, and grooming gangs, like Tommy Robinson has done. I mean, Tommy's got just as much in his past that the media can throw at him, but he has made all his campaigning about grooming gangs, immigration, and Islamization, and anti-political correctness. And it's a great shame, because I did have high hopes for Sargon, but he does seem to be dragging UKIP down. And I don't really know what they can do about it, because obviously I think it's right for Gerard Batten to continue supporting him. I mean, that's good that he is showing loyalty, but it does seem to have hit them hard. I mean, Sargon may still get voted in, although he has got a serious competition there in Anne Widdecombe. And I hope Mark Meacham gets voted in the North, and obviously Gerard Batten. We'll just have to wait and see whether those three people do get voted in. We've also got some news from over America, in America, but again, it does concern these leading populist politicians in Europe, and that's Viktor Orban, the president of Hungary, or prime minister of Hungary, I'm not sure which his title actually is, but he's going to be meeting President Trump. And of course, the left-wing media in America has been attacking him and slagging him off, and they've had a response to this. And the response has come from Zoltán Kovács, the government spokesman who we've spoken about before, who seems to be, he's a pretty no-nonsense guy. And he's pretty upfront with his criticisms of political correctness and the left. And this is his response to the left-wing press and what they've said about Viktor Orban. This week, if you are to believe the East Coast liberal elite, Prime Minister Orban not only does not belong in the Oval Office, he dreams of liquidating the intelligentsia. You know, like Pol Pot or Joseph Stalin, wrote government spokesman Zoltán Kovács. I swear you can't make this stuff up. So it seems they've been likening him to a dictator when he won the election, I believe, with 60% of the vote. I mean, that is a landslide majority there that other politicians in Europe would love to get, and they're not capable of getting it, and they're such sore losers that when somebody does genuinely get those votes because they are genuinely loved by their nation, they can't stand it. They hate it. They have to run them down, call them a dictator. It's exactly the same with President Putin. President Putin is loved by Russia. He wins by a landslide because he's done such great things for Russia. And it's the same in Hungary. Europe owes a real debt to Orban, because all those invaders, they weren't crossing into Hungary because they wanted to stay in Hungary. They weren't breaking into Hungary because they wanted the benefit system there to pay for them. They wanted the benefit system in the north of Europe to pay for them. And Orban, all credit to him, he stopped them from coming through Hungary. He put a fence up, he put guards there, they had volunteers there, and he did the same as Salvini. He stopped these invaders from coming through his country. And he didn't have to do that. He didn't have to do that because they weren't trying to invade Hungary. They were just passing through. And he did that out of loyalty to the other nations in Europe. And it's caused him all sorts of problems with the EU. They're trying to fine him for not taking asylum seekers and trying to say that he shouldn't be allowed to take part in the democratic process. All sorts of below-the-belt dirty tricks they've tried to play on him when all he was doing was standing up for Europe, standing up for Christendom, standing up for Western civilization. And now he's finally going over there to meet with Donald Trump, and he gets likened to Joseph Stalin or Pol Pot. I mean, this guy fought against communism. This is where he got famous from, was for being an anti-communist. When the Iron Curtain fell, he was one of the main leaders of the revolution against the Soviets. And here he is being likened to Joseph Stalin by this left-wing lying fake news press. Zoltan Kovacs continues. He says, those gems above, that the Hungarian Prime Minister doesn't belong in the White House and that PM Orban equals Stalin, come to us thanks to the Washington Post and the Atlantic. The author of the Washington Post article is an analyst at the George Soros-funded Human Rights First and a former Obama appointee to the US State Department, Kovacs alleged. What a surprise. The guy works for Soros. Readers would be disappointed if I didn't bring up Soros. So here we go. Human Rights First is not only funded by George Soros' Open Society Foundation, it is one of OSF's so-called core grantees. That means they are funded to produce writing and carry out advocacy against the Orban government and others like us who oppose their liberal agenda, the government spokesman explained. Kovacs laid similar accusations against the Atlantic reporter, observing, here's the list of sources he quoted for the article. Michael Ignatieff, the Central European University rector. István Rev, also Central European University. Bolix Tranzini, also the CEU. Paul Lenvai, Peter Krecko, Judith Sandir, all at the CEU, and an opposition activist named Imre Shijato. What do all of the above have in common? I'll give you one guess. And of course, that's a reference to the fact that the Central European University is funded by George Soros. I believe that was the one that Orban shut down, the one that was offering gender studies and how to take down right-wing governments and how to have left-wing revolutions and how to promote transsexualism and all the other deviancy that was being promoted at that university of his. The Orban government's relationship with the Obama-era State Department was not a happy one, however, and it remained frosty for some time after Trump's inauguration, despite his warm words for the Hungarian leader. Because remember that Orban congratulated him, and Trump has said good things about Viktor Orban in the past. And there's a reason for this, why Orban wasn't happy with the Obama government. The Hungarian believed that a £700,000 media fund allocated to Hungary by the State Department, in particular, amounted in effect to foreign interference on behalf of the political opposition, driven by a liberal cabal hostile to their government's anti-globalist stance. So the American State Department sent £750,000 to the Hungarian media. I mean, that is election interference. That is election meddling, exactly what Russia keeps get accused of doing. And America is doing this, blatantly doing this under the Obama government. And even against that, Orban still won, because the Hungarians obviously know a good thing when they see it. So lots of good news today. Looking forward to the EU elections. Looking forward to hearing what happens when Viktor Orban meets Trump. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Carolyn Jaeger on the Daily Nationalist. God bless and hail victory.
Radio Aryan. Radio Aryan. Radio Aryan. Radio Aryan. Radio Aryan. Radio Aryan.